And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I think that a very interesting sign of the times, a local thing that happened that has national impact or is a reflection of national trends, is that Geisinger, the hospital conglomerate, has announced this week that nobody is going to get paid less than $15 an hour. Can you imagine something like that 4 years ago?
No. Short answer. For years we heard Bernie Sanders talking about the need to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And we had various places, we had stop gaps where it went from 7.25 to some places to 10.10, if you remember, and some places 12. I think the only place that it originally had gone to $15 an hour was up in the Seattle area.
Right.
If I'm mistaken.
And people all over the, conservatives all over the country said, oh, look at this, they're ruining the economy.
Right, right. And then, of course, COVID hit. And all of a sudden, as we're coming out of the pandemic, there's this great labor shortage. And as a result, the basic laws of economics called supply and demand has taken hold. And the supply of workers has shrunk. The economists are still trying to figure out exactly why. And they'll, truth be told, they'll never come to a complete agreement. You know, they're still debating about the New Deal and Keynesian economics 80 years later. So you're going to get all different kinds of spin on it. But apparently what has happened for the first time in decades, at least since the Reagan Revolution, if not since the Great Society, labor, organized or disorganized, and right now it's mostly disorganized, seems to have the upper hand. And we're seeing in almost across the board in almost all areas, skilled and unskilled, or as Joe Biden put it, essential workers. And the reasons are not fully clear. I was in Ithaca, New York last weekend. My son finally had his formal graduation from Cornell, and we stopped into a restaurant. We're going to take out, eat outside, but we had to order inside, and they had this sign up, and it said, like every other business in Ithaca, we need help, and here's what we're willing to take you if you can only give us a few hours a week, and here's the advantages of coming here. We stopped in for dessert to an ice cream shop that's hugely popular, and they had the same kind of sign up there, but even went more, the shortages of things, that the flavors, they actually were supplementing their homemade ice cream flavors with someone else's brand because they couldn't get enough supplies. They couldn't get enough cartons. They couldn't get enough of certain things to put into their ice creams. And I think a lot of it is because some people don't have production. Now, some of it is because the supply chains have been destroyed coming out of foreign countries because we don't make things in the United States anymore. That's a different conversation. But we certainly have this, you know, informal raising of the minimum wage, that's an interesting phenomenon, because the state legislature still is firmly blocking a formal raising of the wage. It's still $7.25 in Pennsylvania, as it has been for what, a dozen years.
But working people just won't go to work if they can't make a living by working. It's just that simple.
Yeah. Well, it's, and in addition, they want to have different conditions when they go back to work. One of the things is they don't have child care. The schools were shut down, or the schools are starting, and then they send the kids home on quarantine. They don't have adequate ways to take care of things like that. I think that you're primarily right. People say, look, it's just not worth it for us to work. But, you know, there was the article in Bloomberg this week. Everybody thought that, well, not everybody, okay? The Republicans, the regressive party said, oh, we're being too generous with unemployment compensation. People have to have an incentive to go back to work, so we're going to cut off their unemployment comp, the supplement and whatever. And that ended from almost every place on September 1st. But the Bloomberg article said employers are still not seeing people coming back into the workforce.
Well, so, the ideologues in the Republican Party and the conservative Democrats who believe that the proper social policy is slavery, because after all, if you say we're going to starve you so you'll have to go back to work, that's slavery. That's a form of slavery. Don't seem to really believe in the essentials of the capitalist system, because the essentials of the capitalist system are that you have a trading relationship. You exchange like for like. You make a contract that says, I'll give you something that's worth a buck. You give me something that's worth a buck. They don't apparently think that that holds true where working people are concerned. They feel that working people should sell their labor for less than it's worth, because otherwise they won't get the kind of profit they want to get. So they have a very subversive attitude toward their own point of view. If they had a belief in their own point of view, if despite all their crap about believing in what Adam Smith said, they really believed in what Adam Smith said, they would realize that they've got to do something to increase the amount of people who work. And if people can't go to work because there's no child care, or if people can't go to work because there's no elder care, and people have to take care of their families, that you have to therefore produce child care or elder care, that is to say a form of health care. You have to expand the health care system. And that will increase the number of women who can go to work, and that will drive wages down because now you'll have more workers. They would realize that it's in their own best interest to get the government to increase child care and elder care. And they don't pay for it. They get the working people to pay for it anyway, because most corporations don't, big ones, don't pay their fair share in taxes. So you got people who claim to be ideological capitalists, Republican politicians, conservative Democratic politicians, who don't really seem to understand what capitalism is all about.
Well, that's because they're not really capitalists.
I don't know what they are.
They're oligarchists. They're monopolists.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot to unpack there. Let me remind you, you talked about wages and things. We just had a recall election in California where the leading Republican on the ballot, if they had recalled Gavin Newsom, was Larry Elder, who said there shouldn't even be a minimum wage. Right. We should be able to drive wages down to what you said is slavery.
Yeah.
Wage.
Yeah.
And part of this goes to we talk about in communications, and the fact that we've had this huge megaphone for supply side trickle down economics that has repeatedly over time gotten into people's heads so that they think that that is good economics. George Bush's comments about voodoo economics aside, these folks are still sticking with that, that it's supply side and it's not demand side. And, the Keynesians have said that, no, it's demand that drives things. And it flows over into tax policy, whereas where you get the way that corporations spend their money, and, you know, rather than on – investing it into their workforce. You know, they consider.
When you say demand side, what you're really saying is people have to have enough money to buy the stuff that's being produced, right?
Right, right. And companies don't produce things unless they think there'll be a demand for it.
Right. Exactly.
You know, that's when they invest in capital improvements. That's when they invest in equipment and things like that. And it, again, but part of this is a philosophy on human beings. Like, and Larry Elder can say that you should drive down wages. That's not very humane. Where a Larry Elder can say there should be reparations for there should have been reparations for slaveholders because people were deprived of their property, where they don't see people as human. They only see them as property. And, you know, corporations, the smart companies see their workforce as assets. The bad corporations see their workforce as liabilities. And there's a big difference. There's a big difference. There's a reason that a lot of Silicon Valley companies are not unionized, because people, at least at a certain level, get a lot of perks. You know, they go to work and there's childcare at work. They have healthcare at work. They have recreation at work. They have they have free lunches, things like that. But the majority of American companies aren't like that. And that's a big, you know, that was always a struggle, just even to get the basics of safety and a humane wage. You're a real expert at that over the years. So we have that ongoing debate.
Well, the Biden reconciliation plan, or maybe it's Bernie's reconciliation plan, but in any case, the Democratic Party's reconciliation plan is really an attempt to make capitalism work without political restructuring. You would think that every conservative in America would support that approach, because what's the alternative for them? Either some sort of police state or a change in the political system altogether. If you can't make what you say is the system work as a system, people are going to want to change the system, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, what we're seeing now is the people wanting to change the system, but it's not in the way that you're looking at it or the Bernie support is looking at it. They're looking at it in the way that the fringe right is looking at it.
Yeah, they want to go back to the Larry Elder method. Slavery.
Yeah, not only that, but they want to go back to autocrats.
Yep. Well, it's required. You can't have slavery without autocracy.
Yeah, this is where they're headed on this. And don't forget, corporations are not democratic institutions. I mean, the fact of the matter is, yeah, you get a proxy vote for board of directors, but it's not an open primary. These are handpicked people from the autocratic class.
The case that if a CEO can't pick a board that will rubber stamp everything the CEO wants, the CEO, is considered a failure.
Or she.
Or she, yeah.
You know, and then you get into these, I've quoted Tom Hartman a number of times where he talks about that to be a successful CEO, you may have to be a sociopath. And, you get the Martin Shkreli's. Right now, the Elizabeth Holmes is on trial, the lady from Theranos, who is going to have this miracle blood test from a single drop. You could find out 200 different things. It was all a fraud. And
well, the best is your friend Peter Thiel.
Yes. Yeah, Peter Thiel. Not my friend, he's Donald Trump's friend. There was an article about him in New York Magazine, and he has become the Roy Cohn to the Silicon Valley, some of the Silicon Valley company heads. particularly Mark Zuckerberg.
For people who don't know who Peter Thiel is, he's the guy who developed PayPal. He's the guy who made Facebook the towering success that it was and guaranteed that Zuckerberg would always be in control of it.
Yeah.
The guy that's taught all the other Silicon Valley pirates how to be pirates.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, if you read the article, you understand that even from a young age, he seemed to have some sort of a personality disorder. You know, he was sour on the world. He wasn't, you know, warm and fuzzy kind of a guy. He was always like this, sort of like what Stephen Miller was.
Yeah.
The two of them, I think, would, you know, you could see them, you know, rowing the same direction in the rowboat.
And they both have the same politics.
Yes, they really do. I think that article is an important article to read to understand things. You know, with Zuckerberg, his basic philosophy is, you know, if I want to do it, I'll do it. If I don't want to do it, I won't do it. So no matter what is good for the public, it doesn't get done unless he thinks he can profit from it or make himself look good in it. The consequences, there was that leaked memo that came out that said on Instagram, which they had bought, that they're doing real damage to the social fabric of young people. But there's
well,
no consequences.
Thiel's central theory, and he's not bashful about this because he's published a book about it, more than one article about it, more than one speech about it.
Right.
He says that the point of capitalism is monopoly profit, that without monopoly profit, capitalism doesn't work. And therefore, your task as the head of a company is to become the monopolist.
Yeah.
That's what he teaches. That's what the Silicon Valley people follow.
Yeah. Of course, you know, it's been over 100 years that monopolies have been against the law in the United States. But of course, over the last 40 or 50 years, that law has not been well enforced, if enforced at all.
If it hasn't been enforced, it doesn't exist.
Right. And you know, as an economic theorist, I think he's wrong. Monopolies will, maximize profits, but that's not capitalism. Elizabeth Warren is very strong on this. She says, no, the idea of capitalism is that people can enter into the business community and compete. And what monopolies do is they work against a competition. They try to stifle competition at early stages and kill it.
That may be that Elizabeth Warren says that the idea of capitalism is competition, but it is true that the reality of capitalism is monopoly.
Well, it can evolve into monopoly.
It does unless you regulate it.
That's correct. That's correct. And, you know, and again, what is missing in this is that for any one particular business, monopoly may work, but for the country as a whole, for the community as a whole, a system of only monopolies doesn't work.
Ultimately, well, a system of only monopolies is the characteristic of fascism.
You just took the word I was going to use. We're back to that, and we're seeing more and more being written about fascism. I've cited a couple of books. Jason Stanley's book and the one that's coming out in paperback in a couple weeks by Ruth Ben-Ghiat called Strongmen. And you see this merging of the political with the monopolistic, dare I say capitalist, the money people. So this is the struggle of our lifetime right now that we're in, and you know, behind a lot of what we're seeing politically are the money people, the Koch brothers, you know, trying to stop this. They've just put in a huge amount of money trying to stop the infrastructure bill.
Well, that's true. The biggest lobbyists against the infrastructure bill is the pharmaceutical companies and the fossil fuel companies. Koch brothers are part of the fossil fuel lobby.
We're seeing ads on television galore with those two things.
The thing is that this is a struggle wholly within the Democratic Party, because the Republicans have already been bought by the fossil fuel industry and Big Pharma. There's not a single Republican whose vote is up for grabs who could even consider trying to vote for the reconciliation bill. They're bought and paid for. So the existing political struggle is only within the Democratic Party. And within that party, you have, frankly, I don't see anything other than corruption motivating the Democrats who vote against the Biden-Sanders plan. The example of the negotiating for pricing on drugs is an example of it. Three Democrats voted against it, and it died in committee, that the government should, that Medicare should be able to negotiate for the lowest possible drug prices. They voted against that.
Which is good, which is, you know, good economics.
Of course it's good economics. It's good for the government. It depresses the deficit. It lowers the deficit, and it's good for the people. But they voted against it. Why'd they vote against it? Upon examination, it turns out that two of the three exist only because of donations, exist as politicians, only because of donations from Big Pharma. And one of them said, if I didn't get donations from Big Pharma, I'd have no money to campaign on. So don't campaign. Who needs you?
Yeah, but what they're overlooking is that this is one of the most consistently popular positions over time in the United States. People want Medicare to be able to negotiate drug prices.
Yeah,
even, you know, Donald Trump ran on that plank of his platform, so-called platform.
Every hospital negotiates for drug prices, right?
All the health plans do.
Yeah. You know, get a bill from Medicare. You go take an X-ray, or you take a CAT scan, and you just and then Medicare sends you the receipt. It shows you the invoice. It says the hospital charged. This is true. $2,400 for the CAT scan. Medicare approved $130. Medicare paid 80% of it.
Right.
That's a negotiation. If you didn't have coverage from your, if you were an older person who didn't have Medicare coverage, you'd be billed $2,300. In fact, the hospital managed to accept $130, not $2,300. Isn't that a big difference?
Yes. And the fact of the matter is, among hospitals, the charges could range from $1,500 to $15,000 for that same CAT scan.
That's right.
You don't know. You know, there are bills that say that that the hospitals need to publish these things. You may remember, I don't see it much anymore, but when I was used to work in the Catskills, behind the door of every room in the hotel, they had rack rate pricing.
Exactly.
And they told people exactly what that room could, the range of prices that room could rent for.
Right.
We don't see that anymore. Hospitals should have that. You know,
well, the hospitals have fought for years not to permit that.
Yeah, right. You know, if, like you said, if I twist my ankle and need an X-ray, there might be five different places here in Scranton, but I don't know which one has the best pricing. I've got insurance. I've got Medicare. So it really doesn't much matter where I go. They all take Medicare. But to people who don't, I mean,
for people who don't, it makes a difference. But even for you who do have Medicare, it makes a difference, because the politicians will say tomorrow, Medicare costs too much. We got to cut the benefit. But it only costs too much because they won't negotiate.
Right.
You get a congresswoman like this woman, Kathleen Rice from New York, who says you can't negotiate because it's not proper, but I care about the fiscal responsibility of the Biden plan. That woman is lying. It's just an outright lie. You can't care about fiscal responsibility and oppose negotiating for lower prices. It's just not logical.
Well, it's circular logic or faulty logic.
It's blowing smoke. It's blowing smoke.
Blowing smoke. But politicians have learned to do this over time.
But you got to call out these Democrats who are doing it, because the Democrats will not be able to prevail nationally if you have enough of them with that kind of an approach. Because people will say, why vote for these people? And people will be right.
Well, it's not just the approach, but if the Democrats can't pass these things.
Well, they can't pass them if people like Rice and who are the others, Schrader and Peters, they're the ones who voted on not to allow Medicare to negotiate drug prices. If they're the ones who are standing for office, if they're the face of the Democratic Party locally, why would you vote for the Democratic Party? Why vote at all?
Right. Meanwhile, the fact of the matter is the whole idea of being able to elect Democrats or anybody other than these crazy Republicans, we're in peril. What we found out, what we're finding out is that the Republican plan to monopolize power is in full swing, and it has been in full swing. They've used gerrymandering in the past, which is both sides have used. They're using voter suppression, and now they're using all sorts of methods, saying even if people are allowed to vote, and even if the votes are counted, we're not going to honor what the count says. In Arizona, they try to undo the count. They had this phony audit, and lo and behold, it turns out that Joe Biden did better than they said he did. In Georgia, they were there.
He did better, and Trump did worse by their own count. But you know what? Their count, they don't care about. All they care about is that they should put in people's heads that they have the right to do this kind of count, that Republicans have the right to decide who actually won and who actually didn't win, not an impartial election.
Yeah. And that goes basically, they've been spouting this line since the Gingrich era. You've heard me say time and time again, they had this conceit or hubris that only they should be allowed to rule. And it comes from background. It comes from the Koch brothers.
Who say that people don't know what's good for them. As a matter of fact, they'll always choose the wrong thing because they'll choose what's good for them instead of what's good for the corporations.
Good for the Koch brothers corporation. Yeah.
And to their credit, they say it. They don't hide it. They say it.
And then you've got these operational bad actors like Steve Bannon, who are intent on tearing down institutions that can prevent the Koch brothers from getting their own way. We had this John Eastman memo where he talked about how the vice president could ignore the vote, somebody declares that there are other electors other than those certified by the states, throw it into the House of Representatives, or just declare we won. Crazy stuff. Although, as someone pointed out this week, if that's in operation in 2024, if that's the theory, then Kamala Harris would be the vice president who would be doing this. So what's to prevent her from saying, hey, Democrats lost Pennsylvania by 80,000 votes, but I don't believe it. I'm going to declare Pennsylvania for Joe Biden, and we really won.
The conservatives have deeply corrupted the electoral process, and they're continuing to deeply corrupt it. And if that's the essence of American democracy, then American democracy is deeply corrupted.
Yep. Maybe we should go to Canada where they just had a vote.
I don't know where we would go. It would be a real problem. Yeah. It's hard to imagine, you just had a war in Afghanistan, allegedly, to promote American democracy. But American democracy is hardly anything to promote if it's corrupted in the way that it is corrupted. So it's very weird.
It is. But we'll see what happens this week.
See you next week.
All right.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.